You're listening to Season 2, Episode 19 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? Before we get into today's interview, I wanted to thank Vermont College of Fine Arts for sponsoring today's episode. They're the first low residency MFA program in the country to focus exclusively on writing for young readers. At the end of the show, you'll find out why they're ranked one of the best low residency writing programs in the country. We have the awesome Jenny Han on the show with us today. Jenny is the New York Times bestselling author of teen and middle grade fiction, with her most recent books, To All the Boys I've Loved Before and P.S. I Still Love You. The book covers for her Lara Jean series sparked a much-needed conversation about the gravity of representing diversity and how Jenny's work is creating change by shifting the perception of race. In today's episode, we also dive into Jenny's writing schedule and habits, and we learn about the inspiration behind her newest book series. I've heard from several of you about wanting to learn more about writers' retreats. You'll definitely want to pay attention to how Jenny hosts her own retreats and take notes so you can host your own too. Now let's jump right in. Jenny, how are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being on the show. I'm very excited to have you.
It's nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you too. So you're living in Brooklyn now.
That's right.
That is awesome. And you're from Richmond, Virginia.
That's right. Also.
How do you like it in New York?
I love it. I moved up here for graduate school in 2003, and I've just stayed ever since.
Awesome. I can see why. I'm actually from New York, then I moved to LA, but I miss home, and there's nothing like it. Talking about school, I'd love to rewind a bit and ask you how you fell in love with writing and if you went to school for writing.
I did go to school for writing. I've always loved to write. Ever since I was a little kid, I was writing stories in my notebooks and keeping a diary and coming up with stories about me and my friends, almost like fan fiction of my own life. But I never really thought that I could be a writer as a profession just because it didn't seem very practical. And, you know, I grew up in Richmond and there just weren't that many writers that I was coming in contact with. It didn't really occur to me to try to be a writer until I was in college when I took a class called Writing for Children. And that's when I started writing my first book, Shug.
Oh, I'm curious because we're both of Asian background. And I know that with my family, they're supportive, but they're not as gung-ho. Like if I say I want to do like acting or writing, there's like a fear that's instilled in them that they're just like, wait, what? What about business? What about pharmacy or something like that? Was your family super supportive of you going into writing right away?
Actually, they really were.
Wow.
Yeah, I had applied for several different programs when I graduated from college, and they weren't all writing. Like one was UPenn's reading, writing, and literacy program, and one was like a PhD program in writing at St. Andrews in Scotland. They were like all different, but they all had to do with basically children's books. That was my passion. And so my top choice was the MFA program in New York. And when I got in, my parents were just really excited for me. I kind of asked them if they felt nervous. And my mom was just like, you have a really big talent and we really believe that you can do this. So,
wow.
No, like not worried. Yeah, it was actually really amazing.
Are they from a creative background or do they?
No.
Have... No?
No?
Are they like business people?
No.
Wait,
you know what it is? I'll say.
Are they doctors?
No. My mom had a laundromat. My dad worked at Philip Morris. I think really what it was they came to the United States in the late 70s, and I grew up very much like an immigrant's kid.
Yeah.
Where I had to help out a lot when it came to like language stuff and, you know, just like cultural things where they weren't able to offer the same kind of guidance where you see these days or even growing up where people's parents were really involved with what classes they should take or what sort of summer programs they should be doing. My parents were always very much like, we know that you know better than us, so we'll just kind of believe that you know what's best for you. Do you know what I mean? So I think that in a way made me very independent when it came to that stuff, just by necessity.
Wow. My mom was very much like the helicopter parent, or
right.
It was not like, my child knows the best. No, she's like, she knows the best. Why don't you know the best? I mean, she raised my younger sisters the way that it sounds like your parents raised you. And I think because we have like a 10, 11 year gap between me and my younger sisters.
Oh, wow.
So she kind of learned like, okay, helicoptering my kid won't really work out. It's really worked wonders. It's like totally opposite the way we were raised. And I'm always like, hey, that's not fair. You never said that to me.
I mean, don't get me wrong. My parents were really strict in a lot of ways. But in some ways, I would say, oh, you know what? I don't really need to go to school today because it's like not an important day. I went to it was a governor school. So it was like a nerd school where you had to apply to get in. And my parents were like, oh, okay, well, if you think that's best, then that's fine. Do you know what I mean? They just gave me a lot of latitude when it came to knowing what was best for school stuff.
Dang, that is so awesome. My mom is like, what you doing? 99? Where's the 100? Don't they have extra credit? Oh my God.
I think it was because I went to that like smart kids school. They're like, it's so hard, we know.
Yeah, and also they probably realize the pressure you put on yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. As an oldest kid of immigrant parents, I put a lot of pressure on myself. And then with my younger sister, I was definitely the driving force where I was like, why don't you have your internship set up yet? Like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, I definitely took that role.
What's the age difference between you and your sister?
My sister is 3.5 years younger than me. I have like a late birthday and she kind of had an early one. So we are 4 years apart in school, which I think is actually great. Because we're never like competing against each other. You know what I mean? Even though I'm not actually that much older than her, and that's definitely narrowed a lot as we get older, I'm still very much like a big sister to her. And so I think if we had gone to the same high school, it might have been like not as great just because my sister was way more like popular than me. You know, like, and I was definitely more in the sort of nerdy crowd. So it's probably for the best.
You're like, hell no, I'm the oldest one here.
Exactly. I'm in charge. I think we got really, really close when I left for college.
Yeah.
Because in a way, she was able to kind of have her own space.
You have time to miss each other.
Yeah. And really appreciate each other. So I think that definitely is a thing that happens as you get older, is that you can really appreciate your sibling. Because they're the only one who really understands what it was like to grow up in your house with your parents, you know, and like nobody else will ever get that.
I'm sure a lot of people have brought this up to you, but honestly, the covers of your books, growing up, I never saw an Asian female or Asian overall on the cover of a book. Did you have a choice in the cover?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for saying all that. It's always so encouraging to hear that because I think it was the first young adult book with an Asian person on the cover to hit the New York Times bestseller list, which is like really huge because we often hear about how people don't want to buy books with people of color on the cover. And it becomes this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy because there used to be this idea that they just didn't sell as well, you know, so then they weren't putting them on the cover. Mm-hmm. And in this case, my cover designer and I are super collaborative about covers, and she's amazing. I really trust her, but I'm also super picky. I like things to be very specific when it comes to an aesthetic. Like if it's going to be photographic, I think it has to look authentic. I think especially with young people, authenticity is everything.
Yes.
They can really sniff out like a fake thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, it just has to look perfect. It's tricky because it's harder to find an Asian model too. For instance, I co-wrote a series called Burn for Burn with my best friend, Siobhan Vivian, and it's about three girls, and one of them is Asian American, and, you know, one's blonde, one's brunette, and then one's Asian, and when we were going through the photos to look at who we were going to cast, there were so many blondes, so many brunettes, and then here's like five Asian girls that we had to choose from, and one is like 30. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we, I was like, this sucks. I was like, can we get some more options?
Yeah.
But the fact is, there just aren't as many options because racism.
Yes, that's very true.
And standards of beauty or whatever. But I got so lucky with the model for To All the Boys. Her name's Helen Chin. Mm-hmm. And she's also Hapa. She's half Asian, half white. And she was like the exact age of Lara Jean for both of the book covers, 16 and then 17.
Oh, perfect.
And yeah.
I was with my girlfriend in Barnes & Noble just walking through, and I saw your books. It made me stop. It wasn't until your book that it really hit me. It's almost sad for me to say, how come I didn't notice it before? Until your book came out, I'm like, it's so needed. Just wanted to say thank you for that.
Oh, thank you.
Giving us a voice, giving us someone out there to relate to, and being okay. Like you said, beauty in all sorts. I tip my hat to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's so meaningful to me too, because when you get to see someone that looks like you being represented, it feels like your story is being represented and you don't have to kind of like twist yourself to fit into this other kind of story. I think that growing up, there are so few books with Asian characters that you had to identify with white characters, that you had to see yourself in there. And you had to make that work and do that kind of labor to feel like that could make sense to you, or that you felt like, oh, that's so similar to me.
Yeah.
But when you don't get to see yourself deep inside, you get this perception that your story is not as important, or that you don't deserve to be the hero of your own story.
Yeah.
You know, that's a sad thing. And that's why for this book and with this character, I was just thinking about how I wanted her to be like, her story is very different than my story in the sense that it's almost like I look at her and I think about friends of mine who have kids, and that's the kind of kid that they would be raising, where you're like a third generation Asian American. Yeah. And for me as a second generation with my parents who are immigrants and all the language and cultural barriers, it's a very different story. You know, but this, I didn't want to do a story about a girl who was dissatisfied or struggling with her Asian identity. I was kind of wanting to do something that was a story about an every girl who happened to be Asian, but to really just highlight that any girl can be the every girl.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So
it's almost like all these boxes they put us in, but yours freed us from that box.
Thank you so much.
It's crazy how like that one cover says so much.
I remember years ago with my first book, Shug, there was a character in there who was Korean American, and she was really popular at school and pretty. And she was a best friend of the main character who really like admired her friend. And I remember I did this visit one time at a library with a group of kids. They had all read the book. They were like in sixth grade, seventh grade. And the librarian said to them, raise your hand and say one thing about this book that you thought was unrealistic, which P.S. is like not the coolest thing to do in front of the author. But anyway, and then the only Asian girl in the room raised her hand and she said, I thought it was unrealistic that the Elaine in the story who's Asian was popular because Asian girls aren't popular. And it just made me so sad. It really broke my heart. She just said it so, it wasn't like,
it was like a fact to her.
It was very matter of fact. It was not in a sad way. She just said it like it was the truth.
How did you respond to that?
Her name was Julie. I can really like picture her so clearly. I was like, Julie, you know, I was not the most popular girl, but my sister was super popular. Mm-hmm. And there are all different kinds of people. And yeah, you don't have to feel like boxed into just one kind of thing. There's so many possibilities. And I think that's for me and my stories, I would like to have people of color, Asian people, whoever, be able to look at a story and say, I could be the hero, I could be a villain, I could be anybody in that story, and you're not relegated to just the one kind of role.
Exactly. I was doing some research and I saw on YouTube there are these two adorable booktubers extremely excited about your book coming out. This is what it's about. Yes, there is an Asian girl on the cover, and see her as an all-American, and we're part of that American story.
That's definitely huge for me, because I think that there's also a feeling when you see a book cover and it's with someone of a different race.
Yeah.
You automatically go into your head where you're like, I mean, you know what? I just want to read something light. I don't want to do a heavy read. And you kind of have this idea that you're going to have to do extra labor, because we're used to only seeing books where it's about sex slaves or racism. And that's the only time that you see people of color being able to be the hero of the story, mm-hmm, is when it's about their struggle against something. And you rarely see it like a romantic comedy or a TV show or anything where the lead is a person of color, and it's not the whole thing is about that. We need to be able to get used to seeing main characters who happen to be of a different race.
Yes.
And that's not the whole point of their story, because there's so much more to a person. It's a part of them. And obviously that stuff will come up because it's a part of who they are, but it's not the whole of them.
Jenny, you're doing awesome stuff, let me tell you.
Oh.
Seriously. And I'm very, very excited for all your works coming up too. What was the inspiration behind writing To All the Boys I've Loved Before and P.S. I Still Love You? I know there's something about letters that you came across.
Yes. I used to write love letters to boys when I was trying to get over them. And all of the love letters that I ever wrote were pretty much more loves from afar, where I was secretly crushing on somebody or having these like deep feelings for somebody, and I needed to like get over it. It was the letter writing that helped me figure out where my heart was at. It just came really naturally for me because it helped me sort through my feelings, and writing was always the easiest way for me to do that. And so that's the inspiration for the book, is just from my own life, because I still have those letters and I used to keep them in a hat box under my bed.
You still have them?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So funny. And do you feel like you're going to be keeping these letters for a while?
Well, there are only four of them.
Oh.
So, but they're very long.
Not like boxes.
No. It was because they were the most significant boys of my teenagehood. Those are the ones that I wrote letters to. And so they're very long emotional letters, like 15 pages a piece. I'll keep them. I think there is something to artifacts like that because it's just like a moment in time.
I'm like still holding on to birthday letters. I'm like, okay, maybe I should throw those out then.
It's like whoever sent you the birthday card, they gave you the sentiment, you received it. And now you can release it.
That's true. I know. I got to get rid of that. But that's awesome. So basically, there was barely any research process for your book then, right? If anything, the research was reading the letters and going through that.
For the most part, I write realistic contemporary. And there's generally not like a ton of research I ever have to do. More so with the Burn for Burn series. It was a little more of a thriller type of book. For this book, no, nothing really. Usually I start writing first in a notebook, just kind of jotting stuff down, and then I will start transferring it to my computer. Usually I'll do some stuff in the notebook, and then I'll put it in the computer, and as I'm doing it, I'm revising it.
Okay, and are you transferring onto Microsoft Word?
Well, actually Scrivener in the early stages.
I freaking love Scrivener. The stuff they have on that program is unbelievable. So you're using Scrivener. Is there like a specific function that you like to use that helps you transfer your notes from handwriting over to the program much faster?
I think for me, the reason why Scrivener makes sense is that I don't actually write in order. So the only real function I use of Scrivener is that sort of sidebar where you can just move scenes around.
Oh, yeah.
And that's super helpful for me because otherwise it was in a Word doc and I was just cutting and pasting scenes. But sometimes I just like have an idea for a scene and it's just two sentences and then I'll come back later on and fill it out.
They have like a million things, like a million functions that I'm still trying to figure out. Have you tried out the index cards function where it helps you outline and see things from a wider perspective? It literally looks like cute little index cards on your screen. Have you tried that?
My thing is I don't really outline.
Oh, okay. You're not an outliner.
No, so it's really more about shifting scenes around to figure out where everything goes and to know what the flow is.
You don't write in order. I'm assuming it's just whenever inspiration strikes, you kind of hit the paper.
I think of it, it's like dessert first. I just do whatever I feel excited to do,
whatever I
feel inspired to do. And then I just have to ride that wave because it's so rare. I think for me, it always feels hard. Writing always feels hard. But then when you catch the perfect wave, you just have to ride it as far ashore as you can. Sometimes it feels like you're just treading water, waiting for that wave to carry you home.
Yeah.
And when it does, then it's amazing because you don't even realize that time is passing because you're in that mode.
Do you give yourself structure when it comes to a daily writing habit? Because it sounds like you're more free flow, free form, where you kind of just the one day you're not feeling it, you may not. Is that how you work?
That's right. I often get my best ideas when I'm on the subway or I'm in the shower. Or I'm about to fall asleep. I figured out that it's the dead zone. That's what I call it. You're not asleep, but you're kind of just zoning out.
You're tapping into your subconscious almost.
Yeah, like, you're not thinking about anything. There's no stress. You're not pressuring yourself or pushing yourself to get words on the page.
Yeah.
And then your subconscious is allowed to be doing work and filter in a way that's not pressure filled. I think it's only because your mind is super relaxed that kind of creative work can happen.
How do you remember these ideas?
Usually I'm on the subway and then I just open up my phone and I do the notes app, quickly write that stuff down. Or I keep a notebook and a pen by my bed. I'm about to fall asleep. Then I just quickly jot that down in the shower. I'll just keep telling myself whatever it was and then I'll get out and write it down.
I like what you do. You give yourself that freedom. That sounds like it's working really well.
It works well, except when you're under a tight deadline.
Oh.
And then you can't have the luxury of waiting for inspiration to hit. And
that's
why I prefer to write in a notebook because there's something about having a blank notebook that feels like I'm excited to fill the story in and to fill those pages up. But when I look at an empty computer screen, it can be like really anxiety inducing because you're just seeing all the work that you still have to do. And then you're looking at your word count. It's just not as free to me.
Do you go to retreats, writer's retreats that you can recommend or?
I actually host a lot of writer's retreats. I've been doing it for started like 8 years ago. Usually I'm renting a house somewhere in a really beautiful location and I'll invite other writer friends of mine and people will kind of come in and out during the week. I'll stay all week, but then friends of mine who have kids or, you know, regular jobs, they'll kind of come in for a couple of days and then go back out. It's lovely because you get that energy that you have of the whole hive kind of like working on stuff. And for me, it's really helpful because when I'm alone, I think I can easily procrastinate or not get the energy up. But if I'm looking around and it's like 2 in the morning and people are still downstairs like working, I really like that vibe.
Can we dive a little bit deeper into this? Because I'm all about this situation right now. Is there anyone designated to prepare the food, or is there one person overseeing all that?
Usually we will go to the grocery store that first night that we're there and just get a whole bunch of stuff for breakfast and lunch. And then dinners, I'll make us reservations at local places, or I've also like hired like a chef to come and like cook for us. 5 o'clock is the time to like get in the hot tub, have a drink, unwind a little bit, talk about the business, or people can share what they're working on or whatever, or just relax. And then we'll go to dinner, we'll come back, and then people usually want to work a bit more.
I'm loving this. This is awesome.
I always pick a house with a pool and a hot tub, always.
Wow. So are you talking about like beautiful location in the woods? Because I love those locations. Or are you talking about like overlooking a city kind of situation?
Generally, I've done Santa Barbara a couple times, Palm Springs a couple times, Jackson Hole.
So then you're going from New York all the way to Palm Springs?
Sometimes I'll do more of an East Coast-based retreat, like in the Hamptons, or I'll do more of a West Coast one, and I'll invite the same people, but I just know it's easier for certain people to get to the West Coast one than vice versa.
A lot of listeners, they're not in big cities like we are, so it's harder for them to access writers' retreats or conferences. I always try to encourage them, if there's a will, there's a way, do it yourself. Create your own little tribe, create your own thing, like what you're doing with your friends. I think that's awesome and super, super, super motivating too. I'd love to know, Jenny, you've written quite a few books. Can you tell if you've creatively evolved since your first book till now, and how?
My first book, I almost don't even like to look back on it because it's like looking at a diary in a way, because I think I put so much of myself in that book. It's a very personal book. That one's called Shug, and that's the one I started writing in college. And at the time when I wrote that, it's unique in that I didn't know that I was ever going to write another book. Yeah. So I kind of filled it up with all of my observations or thought metaphors and everything. So that book is just like filled to the brim with that. And it's like a different experience because it's more pure in that sense, because I really didn't know if I could write a book or if I would ever do it again. Then my next thing, The Summer I Turned Pretty, was a trilogy. So I've done now, it'll be three, because I'm doing a third book about Lara Jean. And so it'll be three trilogies. I'll have written three trilogies by next year.
Wow. And congratulations.
Thank you.
That's huge.
So it's hard to say about evolution, because when you do a trilogy, it's almost like that's one book in a way.
Yeah.
Because it's all the same characters and they have one major arc, you know, within that. So I don't think of it as 11 different books. It's kind of more like four or five different stories.
And now what about for your book? So you're saying you have a third Lara Jean coming out. That's exciting. So that's what you're working on now?
That's what I'm working on now. Yep. It's called Always and Forever Lara Jean. It's coming out in spring 2017.
Oh my gosh. That's so exciting. Jenny, that's so awesome. I know listeners are going to get really excited about this and super pumped. Thank you so much. You've given us so much of your time. And I'd love to wrap it up with a question that I always love to ask guests. Are there any books or a book that's your favorite that you can recommend to us to check out?
I would recommend a book on writing called Escaping into the Open, Ooh. The Art of Writing True.
I never heard that one.
Yeah, it's by Elizabeth Berg. It's called Escaping into the Open, The Art of Writing True. She writes fiction. She's an amazing writer, but I found her advice to be very soothing and also realistic. Really rang true for me.
Now, Jenny, where can we find you to say hi and to thank you for your time?
I'm on Twitter, and my Twitter handle is at Jenny Hahn. I'm also on Instagram, which is also at Jenny Hahn. And I'm on Snapchat.
Oh, hell yes.
Which is Miss Jenny Hahn.
Thank you so much, Jenny. You've been amazing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's awesome. It's so nice to meet you. Thanks so much, Jen.
That wraps up our interview with the lovely and amazing Jenny Hahn. Jenny, thank you again for being such a joy to have on the show. And listeners, thank you for tuning in as always. Say hi to Jenny on Twitter at Jenny Hahn. To check out Jenny's show notes page and the book she recommends, be sure to head over to 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Jenny Hahn. At the very top of the show, you heard me talk a little bit about Vermont College of Fine Arts. I am so excited to share a bit about them. Like I mentioned earlier, I know there's a lot of you who are really interested in writing books for children or young adults, so you'll definitely want to pay special attention to what Vermont College of Fine Arts has to offer. VCFA has three different graduate level programs for writers, and I'll be going into detail about their program called Writing for Children and Young Adults. Students meet up twice a year on their gorgeous campus in the heart of historic Montpelier in Vermont for intensive 10-day residencies. It's a lot like 10-day retreats for writers, and you guys know how much I love retreats. Imagine attending VCFA's MFA program where you'll be immersed in an amazing writing community filled with intensive workshops, lectures, panel discussions, and readings that are always challenging and inspiring you. After the life-changing experiences at the residencies, you and the faculty will design your own course for the start of the semester by really zoning in on your specific writing goals. Throughout the semester, you'll continue working with faculty mentors through telephone conferences, emails, and letters. So basically, you're receiving one-on-one mentorship throughout your semester as you take control in shaping the kind of education you want out of your time with VCFA. Check out 88cupsoftea.com/VCFA for more info. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.